morning, everybody. Thank you for the kind introduction, and thanks to the organizer for the invitation. Yes, today I want to talk about setting an import tolerance in Europe. So I will have three purposes to mention: the ML setting procedure, the ML application, and the data requirements. A few things I believe you have heard the days before, but there are still some things I believe that are new. So ML setting is the first. You have heard yesterday from Francesca a little bit about how it works, and I just will repeat it. The point is that in Europe, with this new regulation, we only can give an authorization if we have an adequate ML. In this kind, an ML is something like a trade issue. We cannot trade it our produced products if we don't have an ML in Europe. Therefore, it's, from this point of view, it's a trade standard, to answer one of your questions. But it's not the only answer I can give to this question. Once a member state has evaluated the data, he will send it to the EFSA, and the EFSA will assess the evaluation and will do the risk assessment. And Hermine told us yesterday how it will be done in EFSA. And EFSA then will draft a reasoned opinion sent to the Commission, and on this basis the Commission will draft a proposal to amend our ML regulation. The European Commission is responsible to launch the SPS notification, so every trading partner is informed what we are doing. And the standing committee, where the Commission and Member States sit together, then will vote on the proposal, taking into account any comments from the SPS notification. Since last year, we also have to include the European Parliament and in few cases maybe also the Council, before we can publish the new ML in the official journal. And that's the starting point. Once published, 20 days later, it came into force. And then we can give the authorization. Or at this point, when someone asking for an import tolerance, he can import the products to Europe. So there's still something to what those who want to have an ML have to do. There's something missing, and that's the ML application. So everyone who wants to have a new ML, to amend our ML regulation, has to ask for doing this, and for this reason we have to say who can apply for an ML. So that's in Europe all persons, all applicants according to our Directive 91414, so one describing how we have to evaluate active substances and plant protection products. But also other parties can apply for an ML, so parties demonstrating that they have a legitimate interest in health can apply for an ML. This will include civil society organizations, maybe some NGOs, Greenpeace, for example, maybe such an organization which may apply in future for an ML. When they will apply, then they will mostly ask for reducing MLs, I fear, not for raising MLs. Then persons with a commercial interest can apply, and this may be manufacturers, growers and importers, producers. So importers can directly apply for MRL, and of course member states of the EC can do it. So where to apply? For Europe, for the connection to the authorization procedure, it's a member state where you ask for the authorization. For import tolerance, it will be the rapporteur member state of the entire active substance. So you can look it up in the database Francesca showed you yesterday, and in those cases where no rapporteur member state is mentioned there, you have to apply to the Commission, and the Commission will decide together with the member states who will do the evaluation. So the question is, when do you have to apply for an MRL? You need always do it when the MRL laid down in our MRL regulation is not sufficient for your needs. So we have an MRL of 0.05 and you need 0.2 milligram per kilogram. Then you should apply for an MRL before you import it to Europe. And the other thing necessary is you need to have data to evaluate the residue behavior so that we can make our risk assessment. So, which data are necessary? We have explained it in an application form. You can find this application form in the internet, and okay. You have this this form, I think, in your folder. There are a couple of general questions concerning what you will apply for, and at the end it's stated what we're asking for. I just show it to you because there are some boxes you can click in. It, on the paper version, you cannot see that there are boxes. So I just show it to you that there are some boxes you can tick and so on. Just for demonstration, the whole form you have in your folder, and you can find it then in the internet. So as I said, in this form it's mentioned that we need data, and I will go through with you to these data requirements, the data we are asking for. So, the data we are requiring are described in 91414, the Annex 2 for the active substance and the Annex 3 for the formulation. There is no need to duplicate any data when they are available. So we have to take into account all those data which are publicly available. These are codex data. These are our own evaluations. You can retrieve them from public websites. So what we have done in Europe, what's publicly available via Codex, we have to take into account. You can stick to this data. This then don't need to be repeated. But all other data not available have to be presented. And the basis for all the work we will do is what we have heard yesterday, the good agricultural practice. That will be the starting point. So I will start with the toxicology. Why with the toxicology? In most cases, we have a toxicological, or in many cases we have a toxicological evaluation. done in Europe, then we do not need any further toxicological data. But provided that this is a very new active substance and the notifier or the producer of this active substance did not ask for an authorization and for an evaluation of the active substance in Europe, then it is necessary to provide toxicological data. Also, when we have an old active substances which was not included in our Annex 1, and the notifier even did not notify it, so that we don't have any toxicological data for this, then we need the complete set of toxicological data, and it will start with the studies on absorption, distribution, and excretion. The acute toxicity studies with different ways of uptake. Short-term toxicity, mostly 90 days, in few cases 28 days. Genotoxicity testing. Then long-term toxicity and carcinogenicity, reproductive toxicity, delayed neurotoxicity. Sometimes we will request other toxicological studies. That depends on the active substance and what we thought that's needed to be there. Sometimes studies on metabolites where we thought that they have toxicological relevance. For example, for internal authorizations, also medical data. And what will we do, or how will the studies to be generated? We have described this in two directives, but the basis of this description are OECD test guidelines, and description of studies you will not find is in these two directives should be done accordance to OECD test guidelines. So that's the basis. And why do we ask for all these studies? We need to have an ADI value to do the risk assessment, and we need to have an acute reference dose to do the risk assessment, a proper risk assessment. We have heard it yesterday. In addition, for national authorization, we will also derive an acceptable operator exposure level to protect worker, operator, bystander. For the national authorization process, we will also derive proposals for classification and labeling and proposals for the protection of operator, worker, and bystander. So you have seen it's a lot of studies we will ask for, and I believe this is something no importer can deliver. It's up to the manufacturer of this active substance to provide this data. That's something no importer can do. It costs too much money, so it must be the responsibility of the manufacturer. Then another point is methods of analysis. We must be able to determine the residues. The residues for the pure active substance and or for relevant metabolites. In general, we require validated methods of analysis, and for the enforcement they should be done with normally with a multi-residue method. And we expect that at the end the techniques is commonly available, but this is a different or different within the world. In Europe, HPLC MSMS is commonly available. In other parts of the world, that's not always the case. The validation should be done with standard matrices, and this is given here, high water content, high acid content, high fat and dry. And for the products of animal origin, it's milk, eggs, and meat. It depends what you are asking for, what you have to validate. In the future, we will have the validation for the four standard plant matrices available when we evaluate the active substance. At the moment, it may occur that they are not available, so this has to be checked by looking up what's described, or to ask the rapporteur member state. What in many cases always is missing is the matrix difficult to analyze, because we will not ask for this on a regular basis. Such matrices, for example, as hops in Germany, we are a big hop-growing country, and hop is one of the matrices difficult to analyze. Tea is another example of a matrix difficult to analyze. So for this products, it might be in most cases necessary to provide a validated message. And now I'm coming to the residue behavior. I will start with an overview and then go through the different points point by point. So we will ask nature of residue. It's a metabolism in plant and livestock, in processed commodities, and for the national authorization also in rotational crops. And we will ask for the magnitude of residues in plants, in livestock animals, in processed commodities, and again for the national authorization process in rotational crops. When looking to the Codex discussion on Boscalid, you may see that this is an active substance which is easily taken up from the soil and which after application has a huge amount of residues in the soil, which then is easily taken up. We need at the end for this active substance MILs for nearly all crops, also if there is no direct application. So if you send a consignment to Europe which is rejected, and you are sure there is no application done, it might be that an uptake from residues, from remaining residues from the soil. So for the national authorization process, it's important to have this information, and for the imports, not. The amount of data we require depends on what are you asking for. If you're asking for a crop that is eaten only in the fresh state, then we do not need a processing study. If you ask for an import tolerance for a crop which is not fed to animals, we will not ask for data on livestock animals. But if you will import soybeans, for example, we will ask or look to the feeding question. So, and the data and study we were asking for have to comply with two aims, enforcement and risk assessment. I will say something during the a little bit later to some of these things. So, nature of residues, we will look to the formation of metabolites and bound residues, so the non-extractable residues which may be released in the stomach may be a problem. Therefore, we will look for these residues. These tests are normally performed by carbon 14 labeling. When we have active substance with different structural elements, it might be necessary to do the labeling at different parts in the molecule, and the dose range to be applied in these studies is normally equivalent to the intended use range. So metabolism studies, we will not ask for every crop to do metabolism studies. We have categories, and we look through, compare the GAP, the crop in the GAP to these categories, and we'll see it's falling into a category. If we have a metabolism study for this category, it's nothing more necessary. If it is not covered by metabolism studies in, from this category, we will ask for additional metabolism study. It ends normally up when we have metabolism studies from crops from three different categories. The maximum number is five categories. So if we have studies from three categories and the metabolism is comparable, then also no further data are necessary. So it's still important to consult the publicly available data first before starting new studies. So what I just said, if rate and fruit is comparable, then we do not need any further metabolism studies. So livestock feeding studies necessary when residues in feedstuff occur. We will normally ask for ruminants, and that's the goats, and for laying poultry. In some cases, also pigs, and this is always the case when the metabolism in ruminants is different from that in the rat. The rat metabolism we have in the toxicological section. When we have here the results from the goats, we can compare the two metabolism pattern, and if it is different, we will ask for pig study. I'm not sure, three or something like this, metabolism studies in pigs. I think more we haven't seen in Europe so far. So it's very, very seldom to see something like this. Processing is a quite easy thing. The maximum are three hydrolysis studies. We study the processes, the common processes, and in most cases it's hydrolysis that determine what happens with the active substance in the product. And you can condense the different conditions to three hydrolysis studies. It's quite easy to perform. So that's one of the easiest things. There are a few cases which are not covered by hydrolysis studies. It's especially the production of oil. Where hydrolysis studies may not cover the processing conditions. Just for information, rotational crop studies are not necessary in permanent crops. You apply year after year the same active substance. It makes there we will not ask for rotational crops. There is no crop rotation at the end in these crops. and we will not ask if the degradation in the soil is quite fast. And if no uptake of residues via the soil will occur. Maybe a little bit tricky to find it out. You have to look what happens in the metabolism studies. You have to go back and discuss with the colleagues from responsible for the efficacy. They have sometimes some indications on this. And when these studies are always necessary if you find in soil metabolites that do not occur in the plant metabolism. In this case, there may be an uptake of metabolites in the, from the soil in the plant, and you do not know anything from the toxicological side. You have to look whether these are taken up to make decisions on the proper risk assessment. This is always a case to ask for rotational crop studies. So what will we do with all this information? We will define residues. And how will we do it, or what do we have to take into account? We have to take into account the presence of residues in significant amounts, either active substance or a metabolite. We will take into account the toxicology. If a metabolite is more toxic than the parent, we will more stick to the metabolite than to the parent. And we have to take into account what can the colleagues in the lab do. So do they have a method of analysis? Is it a multi-residue method or not? So we have to take all these three points into account and make a judgment. It's during the last years it became a little bit easier because we can set two different residue definitions. The one for enforcement, which is published with the MIL. When you see our MIL legislation, sometimes it's only stated active substance. Then it is the active substance to which the MIL apply. Sometimes it's stated active substance plus a metabolite. Some expressed as normally parent. Then it's a residue definition that cover also a metabolite. So this should not occur too often, because it makes more problems for the colleagues in the lab. That's a residue definition for enforcement. And then we have the one for the risk assessment. And for this, we can include all substances that are of toxicological concern. Unfortunately, for the moment, this residue definition is not publicly available. We have to start to do it. But, as I said, it's for the moment not publicly available. And this residue definitions then will apply to the plant products, and to the products of animal origin. And when we have two different residue definitions, this will also extend to the analytical work in the residue trials. And we have in those cases where the residue definition for enforcement is the same as for risk assessment, you only have to do one analysis. If we have different residue definitions, you have to do, in many cases, two times to analyze the product. One to cover the residue definition for the risk assessment and one for the enforcement. So, magnitude of residues. It's to determine the level of residue and to assess the consequences of these level on the health of humans and according to our now MRL regulation, also health of animals. Trials should cover realistic worst case conditions, only cover only situations where an authorization is asked for. That's going into the direction ELARA principle. So if someone is asking, let's say, for apples, he will only get an MRL for apples. If someone is asking for an MRL and having a GAP for palm fruit, he will get an MRL for palm fruit. But those who are asking for an MRL for apples will not automatically become an MRL for palm fruits. So only cover situation where an authorization is asked for. And as I said before, the results of the metabolism studies has to be taken into account, and what's missing here, we will start or need to know the stability of the residues in the commodity. That's one of the points necessary, but not stated here. So starting with the plants, because that's in most cases that what's missing for an importer runs. We divide our crops into two different parts, major crops and minor crops. The division depends on the diet, mostly on the diet. So that's the we have explained it in our guidance document, something which is eaten more belongs to the major crops, something which is eaten in minor amounts belongs to the minor crop group. We also have to take into account the production area and the amount produced, but this is mainly for borderline cases and for the feeds. So what we're asking then for is we're asking for 8 trials for a major crop and 4 trials for minor crop. Europe for the moment is divided into zones. We will ask for the number of trials in each of the zones. And when we are going to 3 zones, I believe we will not ask for 3 times the number of results. It's at the end a question, what's the starting point, what's the minimum, and what's the maximum, and in between you have to find out an intelligent system to derive the number of trials over Europe. I believe that's the way we will go. And what we have also in our guidance document, we have possibilities to extrapolate our results from one crop to another crop. We have stated which are the representative crops for a crop group, and then when we have sufficient results for this representative crop and someone is asking for use in this crop group, he can get the MRL for the crop group. And if there's somewhere an MRL in Europe for a certain crop, and this one is a representative crop, and you will ask for an import tolerance for crop belonging to this crop group, it might be possible just to extrapolate the results, provided the GAP is the same. That's a requirement. The GAP for the crops must be the same. Then we can extrapolate to a huge extent. Livestock studies, as I said before, only if there is a contamination of feed, and then these studies are necessary when significant residues occur in crops or crop parts of the fed to the animals, and when the metabolism studies indicate that residues above 0.01 milligram per kilogram may occur. 0.01 milligram, that's the default value. Therefore, if residues expected at a higher level, we need the feeding study. Normally, these studies then are done with four dose groups. So the control group, the expected level, 3 to 5 times the level, and 10 times the level. So if there is a study available and within the range of doses, there is the residues and the dose group go in parallel, then you can extrapolate within the dose range. Then it is not always necessary to do a new trial just because you exceed the 1x level with a second or third crop doing the or adding to the 1x level. So if it's possible to have a trial with a 1x level and afterwards to extrapolate from a 2x level due to the results we have with this study. So lactating ruminants and laying poultry are normally the animal studies, and pigs sometimes. I do not remember whether we have really a feeding study in a pig in Europe. Then processing. We will look for the importance of the processed products in the diet of humans and animals, and the level of residues in the plant or plant products to be processed, and the physical chemical properties of the active substance or relevant metabolite before we decide that a processing study is needed. For example, due to dilution, we know the level of residues below. We do not need processing studies of hops to beer, just because we know how many hops is used for a 100 liter of beer. You just can recalculate the residues back to the dilution in 100 liter of beer to be below the 0.01 milligram per kilogram level. So this is something we will take into account, for example. So we want to try to cover types of processes and have defined 11 processed types. And we will ask for two different types of studies, so-called balance studies for the distribution within the process, the distribution of the residues to all intermediates and end products, and follow-up studies that are then for the important food and feed items, where we only ask for then for the results at the beginning and in the important end products. And the number of studies then depends on the type of study: 1 balance studies, 3 follow-up studies. And the reason why we stick to processes is we want to extrapolate results done with one type of process to all crops undergoing the same process. Yes, and just quickly to cover the rotational crops. Again, the magnitude of residues are not necessary for the moment in permanent crops, and if no uptake of residues occurs, and it's in Europe for the moment a stepwise procedure foreseen with preliminary tests in 3 steps and main test in 2 steps. And because it's rather complicated, even the European producers producers of active substances and plant protection products stick normally to the US guideline and produce rotational crop studies according to the US guidelines, and this is also accepted in in Europe. So what will we do when we evaluate studies? We will derive MILs for products of plant origin and MILs for products of animal origin. And from the processing studies, we will derive transfer factors needed for the enforcement labs when they, for example, analyze the fruit juice to recalculate the residues I found in the fruit juice back to the entire fruit to compare it then with the MIL. And we will derive values necessary for the risk assessment, like we heard yesterday, the SDMR value, the HR value. For the ML setting process, we use statistical methods to say what will be the region where we expect the highest residue, and then set there the ML. And an ML can only be proposed and set if the residue do not have any adverse effect to humans and animal health. We heard it yesterday from Hermine, and therefore an MIL in certain cases also have a health implication. So it's not only the trade, but also the health. In many cases, I agree, it's far below any acute reference dose, ADI, there's no health implication, but in a few cases, you are at the borderline, and then you have to strictly comply with this MIL to expect no harm to humans and animals. So proposed MILs will set to cover enforcement purpose, and for the moment it's not possible to recalculate from the MIL set to any risk assessment purpose. So before I finalize, I have to add a few things. What I told you is the current situation in Europe. We have in the past discussed or redrafted our data requirements to adopt it to the state of the art. This is at the moment available to the Commission. And the proposal is to include also honey in the future, in the magnitude of residues. Bees and honey are a problem in Europe. The proposal will be to include also metabolism and magnitude of residues in fish. And what we also have to take into account when we change our data requirements, we have to align it with the OECD requirements. And with this, I thank you for your attention.